This is Bias Bender, and I'm Kayla Stokes. Welcome to the 20th episode of this podcast, where we are exploring the lives of Black women from the past and the present in order to imagine the future. This week's episode is about Zelda Wynne Valdez and traffic-stopping fashion. We are also joined by the incredible Olivia Anthony. Hello, everyone. Wow, can you believe this is the 20th episode? I kind of can't wrap my mind around that fact. It feels like I just started this podcast, but that was back in August, and it's 2021 now. I'm so grateful that I've been able to keep with it so far, and as I talked about in the previous recap episode, I think we have a lot of fun coming in the future with this podcast. So thanks for sticking around so far, and if this is the first episode you're listening to, welcome. I'm so glad you all are here. Now, let's get into it. All right, this week I want to lead into the topic by letting you in on how I pulled this episode together in the first place. So no episode is the same when it comes to how it gets done, which is fun because until I'm in the thick of it, I don't really know how it's going to turn out. For example, this week I talked with our guest Olivia Anthony before I knew which historical figure I would pair with her interview. So, of course, I was blown away by her lovely personality and spirit for fashion, as you will probably be when you listen to our conversation later on in this episode. And after I chatted with her, I was thinking to myself, wow, who the heck can I pair with this woman who is making show-stopping fashion pieces that are so incredibly cool? To be honest, I sat with that question for quite a while, and I did some digging and researched a few different women from history, but no one quite fit the bill until I happened upon Zelda Wynne Valdez. So let's talk about her and unpack why I think she's so cool. Spoiler, she created one of the most iconic silhouettes from the 20th century that I'm pretty sure you'll recognize. Zelda Wynne Valdez was born on June 18th, 1905, in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. She was actually trained as a classical pianist, but early on she became engrossed in sewing and all the skills surrounding tailoring. After graduating from high school, she went up to White Plains, New York, to learn from her grandmother and uncle who were in the tailoring industry. She honed her skills and worked hard to become an undeniable talent with a variety of fabrics and cuts. Once she felt confident in her skills, it was time for Zelda to work towards making a living with those skills. She landed a job at a local high-end boutique, but because she was a Black woman, they had her working behind the scenes as a stock girl. She had a plan, though, and her plan worked. As the store saw her talents, she was promoted to work in the front of the store as the company's first Black saleswoman and tailor. Do I like the idea of Zelda having to be better than everyone else to gain a visual appointment? No, not at all. But to be honest, neither did she. When she was asked to reflect on that time, she is quoted as saying, "It wasn't a pleasant time, but the idea was to see what I could do." Of course, that wasn't all that Zelda accomplished once she got the ball rolling. By 1935, she started her own business. I can only imagine working for herself was far more satisfying than working for a company in which she had to prove her worth time and again. So starting and running her own dressmaking business was a sweet victory. Zelda was known for knowing how to flatter a woman's figure like no one else. She made women feel confident and taken care of just by fitting a dress specifically to their unique shape. In order to broaden her clientele, Zelda put on fashion shows to entice folks with her designs, and they did just that. She showed beautiful dresses and gowns for every occasion, including wedding dresses. Socialites and women looking for the perfect cut were falling in love with her sense of style. So in 1948, Zelda was able to move her business to New York City. And that's when business really started booming. Her boutique was called Zelda Wynne, and it was located on Broadway and 158th Street. What I think is the coolest part about her business is that it became this safe haven for Black women who felt slighted when they tried to purchase gowns and dresses from white-owned businesses. Zelda must have taken those scorned feelings that she felt while working at that boutique in White Plains and She worked to make sure that other Black women wouldn't have to feel that way. That is just such a good example of putting your skills to good use. And around this time, Zelda was also a part of starting the National Association of Fashion and Accessories Designers, which is an organization meant to help Black female fashion designers. The association works to protect folks from discrimination in the workplace while promoting diversity in the fashion industry. So, Zelda was working to make her industry a better place while making her beautiful designs. Her client base was growing, and it really hit a new peak after she designed the wedding dress for a famous Harlem duo. The couple was Maria Ellington and Nat King Cole. After the world saw how stunning Maria's dress was, suddenly Zelda was making dresses for just about every Black female starlet around. She was pumping out dresses for Josephine Baker, Eartha Kitt, Ruby Dee, Diane Carroll, Mae West, Marlene Dietrich, and even Dorothy Dandridge, who you would know all about if you listened to episode 9 of this podcast. Of course, if you need a refresher on Dorothy, you can always head over to that episode. I think it's a pretty fun one. Zelda was a success, and she knew it. She even moved her dress shop down to Midtown right around the corner from Carnegie Hall. The renamed boutique Chez Zelda had a staff of 9 dressmakers and was known as the place to find a custom design. In fact, they were so exclusive that her dresses were being sold for at least $1,000 each. I've never spent that much on a dress, but I understand why Zelda's designs were priced that way. She used only the best fabrics, and she spent so much time fitting the piece to the individual customer. And then we get to one of the more iconic moments of her career. So by the time we get to the 60s, Zelda is a bona fide boss when it comes to dressing the stars of the time. She is running a successful business and making powerful partnerships. One of those partnerships ended up being with a man who would end up building a brand out of a very controversial depiction of a fluffy little animal. It turns out that Zelda was commissioned by Hugh Hefner to work on the costumes for the women who worked in his Playboy lounges. And Zelda, being the master seamstress she was, designed and executed bodysuits that made the women look, well, incredible. You might hate the idea of Playboy bunnies, I get it, but you have to admit that the look is iconic, to say the least. Did you know that a Black woman and her team were behind that tiny little corseted outfit featuring bunny ears and a fluffy tail? I definitely had no idea who was behind that look, but it makes sense to me that Zelda was the woman for the job. She knew how to make a woman look her best, and, well, those original satin costumes did flatter the women, to say the least. Obviously, this project wasn't the most important thing that Zelda did during her long career, and it wasn't the last thing she did either. In the 70s, she started designing the costumes for the Dance Theater of Harlem. If you don't know about this famous dance company, I'll give you an all too brief rundown. So they're a ballet company that still exists to this day. The Dance Theater of Harlem was founded by 2 men, Arthur Mitchell and Carol Shook. Arthur was the first Black principal ballet dancer at New York City Ballet, and he was inspired to start his own way more inclusive company after he lived through the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. And, well, that's just what he did. The company was founded in 1969, and pretty soon after that, Zelda began working with the company to design costumes for the ballet dancers. She even introduced the technique of dyeing the dancers' tights to match the variety of their skin tones. Up until this point, folks with skin darker than pale white had to just grin and bear the pink tights that were standard. But Zelda decided that the dancers should all have tights that made them look their best. So instead of trying to conform to the white standard that the ballet world provided, Zelda encouraged the dancers to do what she did and forge their own path. Zelda eventually closed her business in 1989. She continued to work with the Dance Theater of Harlem until she finally retired at the age of 83. She spent her career making dazzling dresses and costumes that made folks take a double take. And on top of that, she worked to make her industry a more inviting place for people who looked like her. Zelda passed away in 2001 at the age of 96. She left behind a legacy of making the world a more beautiful and inclusive place to be by making her own way. So that's the story of Zelda. I had no idea that she existed before looking into her story, but I'm so glad I learned more about her. She was so, so, so very cool. I encourage you to look up pictures of her designs because they are truly drop-dead gorgeous. I'll be sure to leave some in the social media posts about this episode, but seriously, check her out. I'm really excited that I found Zelda's story because I think she ended up being the perfect person to pair with Olivia Anthony. Now, they are not identical story-wise, but they are both women who make clothes that make people feel really, really good. And Olivia is really on her way to making a mark dressing the stars of today. So, just to give you a little rundown before I turn it over to our conversation, I'll tell you that Olivia Anthony is a fashion designer who has her own line called Live Streetwear that is so cool. But to be honest, I think Olivia can probably explain her journey into starting a fashion line best, so I'll let her take it from here.
So my name is Olivia Anthony. I am originally from Birmingham, Alabama. The brand is based in New York, and I am the CEO and founder of Live Streetwear. Also, we have a brand called House of Olivia Anthony as well. So yes, that's my child. That's my baby.
Perfect.
And I'm happy to be here.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. So tell me a bit about how you ended up starting a fashion line. What goes into that? Like, what's the origin story?
So basically, I started off as a stylist. And I was just like, you know what? I have to launch a website to show people in New York that, like, what I can style. You know, so I was like, I'm going to launch a website called OliviaAnthony.com. And so I had a whole launch party, and I think it was like my junior year in college. And at the launch party, I had people wearing like my logo on t-shirts, and I had like men and their logos was painted on their chest, like really extra. And then people were like, I want a shirt. Like, how can I get a shirt? And so shirts turned into hats, hats turned into jeans. And then I started doing fashion shows on campus, and then started going to other schools, and then I started selling out of the trunk of my car on campus. So it became this whole thing that I never even imagined, because I was just wanted to focus on styling. And then when I moved to New York, I took a break, and I, you know, focused on doing internships at Complex and all that good stuff. But I was like, you know what, I really miss my brand. So that's when 2017 is when I did the really hard relaunch and went into like cut and sew. And it's just been amazing from there.
So, wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool. It seems like it was like an organic, just, yeah, it was meant to be this way.
I always say that Live Streetwear is a gift from God. I was meant to live. Mm. So, yeah.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So
during that whole journey, and even today, what would you say is one of the most surprising or challenging aspects of, you know, running a line?
I feel like everything in life that is great, it has challenges. And I feel like because it's just me, it gets overwhelming sometimes. Like, you know, each challenge, you know, just trying to see if I could face it. But you know, I just always try to lean in my faith, and my parents and my family are super supportive. But I just try to take it one challenge at a time. I try to do everything one step at a time, because I do get super overwhelmed. And I'm so blessed for my team. I have a small team, but I think you know, each step there was something different, like trying to find a manufacturer, you know, quitting my job, and you know, saying that I want to do this full time, and like stepping out on faith in that. And then, you know, just trying to find back in is still like a journey that I'm going through to this day. So I think each level you go through different challenges that you have to face. But it's just all about just staying consistent and just understanding that you learn something each time, so you don't want to miss out on the lesson. So That's right. How I just try to keep my mindset. But I mean, I'm so blessed that I get to do something that I'm my own boss, but also it's interesting to also learn how to be a boss in that role and listen to other people and not listen to people. So it's just an interesting journey. So,
yeah, cool. Okay, then my next question is, hopefully a fun one.
Yay!
Can you pinpoint any specific moments where you felt like, oh, I'm finding success. This is good.
Okay, so the first moment, I feel like I've had small moments, like when, because I have another brand called House of Livy Anthony that I'm like slowly bringing back, but when she, I call her she because she's her own person. But when House got their first, like, my pants was on the first cover of a magazine. And then we were in Vogue China. That was crazy.
Yeah.
And then for Live Streetwear, it was like when SZA wore the snap-offs that Afropunk on stage. It was like everybody was there but me. And people were like texting me. It was like, wait a minute, like, yo, was that your pants? So, I mean, those were the beginning moments. But each day, every year, like, especially this year, like, being on Beyonce's site, Vogue, like, I did a Foot Locker campaign. Like, it's just always each year God outdoes himself. So I'm ready for 2021 to see, like, what comes out.
Yeah, totally. And when that happens, I mean, on those moments where a piece is featured here, a piece is featured there, do you know, like, months in advance? Or is it just like, oh, cool?
Sometimes I know months in advance, like Foot Locker. Like, if it's a deal, like Foot Locker, Lumix, or Bleak Fitness, I know that it's coming out. But, like, press, like, sometimes we, like, set up, like, if we are dropping something big, we know it's coming out. But majority of the time, people tag me or, like, did you know this was up? And I'm like, oh, my God. It's just, like, a little, like, push that I'm on the right path. So it's just like it's exciting. I try not to get too hung up on it though, because it's like it's so much work to be done. So I just always like, oh, that's great. And then like the next day I'm like focused on something else.
Right. Yeah.
Which is a gift. That's
so fun.
Yeah,
that's true. I feel like there's a fine line between like we need to celebrate the good things, but also we can't let it, you know,
take you distract over. Us. Exactly.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. So let's see. What does it mean to you to be a Black woman in this space of like streetwear and stuff that's heavily, I feel like, dominated by men right now and historically?
It's so interesting because for the longest, I never paid it any attention. Like, definitely that I'm Black, definitely, because that's what my brand is all about. It's just celebrating our culture. Like, my first body of work was my love letter to our culture, because I felt like people were like wearing baby hairs and grills and like nobody knew where it was coming from. So I did it all based on Freaknik, because I always try to like celebrate us. But when it came down to being a woman in streetwear, I was just like, I'm in streetwear, and I was just like competing with myself and just competing with like Supreme in my mind or like all these other brands. And then like I think like 3 years ago, somebody was interviewing me and she was like, how does it feel to be a woman in streetwear? And I was like, dang, like, it really isn't that many of us. And I started researching and I found my mentor, April Walker, who is like the first to even do it. And just, you know, surrounding myself. And I feel like now that it's starting to be noticeable, and I've done a panel like with Billionaire Boys Club with like Bashy and like women that are in streetwear, you could tell that it's not that many of us. But you know, I think it's great that we can, you know, that it's starting to get known and that we're speaking on it and that people can celebrate us and we can celebrate each other and spread the knowledge and the stories that it is a lot of women who do it and that have been doing it or who's been behind men in the design room making their face look good, you know? So I'm super excited. I think this is an amazing time to be a Black woman designer. It's like the Renaissance. So I'm just like blessed that I caught this wave of just greatness. So it feels empowering.
Yeah. So going off of that, I'm wondering who you would consider among who, what, anything that you consider to be among your inspiration.
Just like for my brand or just myself?
Both. Anything that comes to the top of your mind?
Well, like what inspires me in a sense.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. like definitely like my sister and her whole story, like watching her grow. Like, so basically live streetwear is like the whole world it lives is in the 90s. Like you may not see a full 90s moment, but you'll see like type of like inspirations. Like the last collection I did was inspired by like taking pictures at the mall or like, you know, dating and matching your boyfriend. I don't know why I'm smiling so hard, but I used to do that and my sister used to do that. And I just like watching her grow up, and like for the longest I used to be so embarrassed by our culture because I used to think like twerking and hard hairstyles was so ghetto. And just being able to like flip that narrative and celebrate it and just, you know, tell the next generation where it comes from and just like being inspired by like my family. Like I did a collection called Live Summer and it was like based off like my mom and dad taking me to Gulf Shores. So like I pull inspiration for like what I used to like what I lived in. And then I also pull inspiration from like everyday people like in Soho, like walking down the street, I may see something. Or I love movies like Love Jones and like all those movies. So it could be anything that triggers me. Like right now I'm looking at 101 and I'm like, oh my God, Brianna was like did I say her name right? But Kyla Pratt on that show was so fly, her and Spirit. And it's just like, they were like the euphoria of now. So it's just like getting inspired by, I can get inspired by anything.
So, right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Let's see. Kind of a big question, but I'm wondering, I don't know if there's an answer to this, but what does brand building mean to you?
Brand building.
I feel like it's such a buzzword these days of like on social media, like, you know, you got to build your brand and let them know who you are. And
definitely. I think it's just like right now, I think 2020 was like the year of me like learning my my live dolls and my customers, like what they want. Because sometimes I may want like these loud color overalls, which, you know, and they may want cozy, you know. It's just like also just like learning your customer and like feeding them what they want, but also being true to yourself and not losing your full identity to sell your soul just for money. And just like finding like a happy medium of that.
Yeah. Did you feel like over this past year that that is something that was challenging for you? Or did you find like, oh, okay, like I'm finding my people by doing this?
I find it like exciting because I just feel like, because I know that this journey is a never ending journey. I think that, you know, I think 1 year I was focused really on like press and getting my name out there. And then, like, this year, I was like, okay, I really want to focus on my clients and, like, what they want. So I feel like it was exciting. We did surveys to see what they want and, like, where they get.
Cool.
Yeah, it just was a fun way to connect with them and just making sure that, you know, we have that relationship, that I can hear them and then they can support me, you know, by understanding that they're being heard. So, it was fun. I mean, I was in quarantine, so. It wasn't that much.
Nothing was the same.
Right. It was like the perfect time to do it.
It was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So let's see. My next question is a question that I like to ask everybody who's on the podcast. And so the podcast looks at the past and the present, which is you, in order to imagine the future. So I'm wondering what your hopes are for the future right now.
For the future, I am super excited. I'm super excited to just bring more amazing, iconic moments that could live forever. That my, I don't want to call them clients, but like my live dolls could be excited about and just be, you know, like a walking billboard. I'm just excited to bring more fashion and awareness to my hometown because I just moved back home. So I'm excited to like be a platform to show people that you can kind of do, we're in a living in a time where you kind of do anything anywhere. And you know, just becoming more worldwide. Like, I want my stuff to be in, like, China and just Paris, London. So just becoming a worldwide name is, like, the ultimate goal.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so my last question is the easiest of all. Where can we find you and your work?
So you can find my clothing at www.livestreetwear.com. You can find me at Live for Olivia. It's L-I-V, the number four, Olivia. And then my brand is at Live Streetwear. And everything, if you follow at Live Streetwear, you'll find everything else. So, yeah.
Perfect. Amazing. Yay! That is it. I'm so glad I got to connect with Olivia and chat with her about what it's like to run a fashion line today. While her style is a bit less old world glam compared to Zelda's, I think these two women have a lot in common. While Zelda blazed her own trail in the gown making world, Olivia is currently doing the same with streetwear. I think it's so cool to see that fashion and clothing still have such power for Black women. I can only imagine that Zelda felt the same sense of pride seeing her designs on Dorothy Dandridge that Olivia has now felt seeing her work worn by SZA. How cool is that? Thank you so much for listening. I use the following sources to research this week's episode. How Zelda Wynne Valdez Redefined Fashion by Princess Gabara on Shondaland.com. FashionABC.com's article on Zelda Wynne Valdez. Zelda Wynne Valdez, the creator of the Playboy Bunny costume by Meseret Kentake on KentuckyPage.com. BlackEconomic.co.uk's article, Zelda Wynne Valdez, Remarkable Black Women. SheMadeHistory.com's article on Zelda Wynne Valdez and the Dance Theater of Harlem's website. Original music, as always, by Adam Westerman.